Auckland's Radio.
Now in the studio with me, I have Jill from the Samaritans. Welcome, Jill.
Good morning.
Now, I'm sure everyone's heard of Samaritans, but tell us, what do the Samaritans do?
Okay. Well, what they do is they listen, and that sounds really, really simple, but that's the basis of it. And it came about, really, a long time ago, 1953. I think it's coronation year. Is that coronation year? I think so. Chad Varra, who was a vicar at St. Stephen's Walbrook in London, came up with the original idea. Now, he sort of thought about it many years before, a long time before, in fact, when he was a sort of curate in London, and he buried a 14-year-old girl who had taken her own life. Now, she'd taken her own life because she'd started her period. She thought she'd got some dreadful disease. She had no one to talk to about it, and she killed herself. Now, he didn't do anything about it right then. He just remembered it ever such a long time later. At this time, he was then in St. Stephen's Walbrook, which is in the city itself. And at that point, apparently, there were roughly 3 suicides a day in London, which is a huge amount, mostly among the poor population because, you know, things were bad, things were difficult, they had no money. And then he thought, well, what can I do? He had a lot of contacts within the newspaper community in Fleet Street because he wrote articles to top up his stipend, really. He had not enough money as a curate, and then he was a vicar by this time, but still low wages, obviously. So he thought he could get publicity for anything he wanted to do, and what he thought he would do was set up a phone line. Of course, it would be one phone line for the suicidal. He thought of the other emergency services and he thought, well, you know, a phone line for the suicidal. And that's exactly what he did. The original number was MAN 9000. I don't know why he liked that particularly and he got it. It was going free, that number. So he got publicity through the newspapers and he got quite a lot of calls. So he also set up almost like an MP's surgery, if you like, or a doctor's surgery. And people could come along and talk to him too, because obviously as a vicar, he'd counselled many people anyway. So they came. And of course, while they waited, they had cups of tea and possibly a sandwich, possibly not, by, you know, ladies of the parish who really wanted to help Chad. And so he'd come out for the next person, you know, and often the next person wasn't there. And then the next person wasn't necessarily there. And of course, what had happened was they'd talk to the ladies of the parish or they'd talk to each other. And that's all they needed. They didn't need specialist help as such. They just needed to talk to somebody to get their worries off their chest. And that's how it started. That was in November in 53. By February the next year, he'd handed it over virtually to a whole bunch of other people, but he still kept in touch. I mean, he was still the top man, if you like, but he didn't enter into any more phone calls or counselling. And it just grew. It just grew and grew from there. So that was the start of it. Talking, listening.
So it's all about listening, not about specialist advice or specialist knowledge or anything like that.
It is. I mean, our volunteers are trained very well. I mean, they come to an information evening, they come to a sort of sit-and-play-games evening where you get an idea of people's thoughts and how they feel about various things. I say play games, it's called selection. They select us and we select them. And most people, if they've got that far, want to join us. You know, they are that type of person. But yes, listening. And that's quite difficult. I remember when I first heard that, I thought, well, how's that going to work? It works. Obviously, you still speak, but you mostly, well, you don't ever offer advice. You don't talk about yourself. You listen. And then in listening and sort of jogging the person along a bit, what you do is you arrive at options rather than advice. So what normally happens with many, many cases, not all, but with many cases of people in distress and despair, they arrive at their own answers without really knowing it. You talk around it. And I've had people say at the end of a conversation, thank you for that advice. And I think, oh, my God, I didn't give advice. I'm not meant to give advice. But no, I hadn't. But they thought I had because they'd arrived at a solution or sort of a solution, you know. Doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes there is no solution. But that is that's the basis of what we do. We're not counsellors as such. We're not trained as counsellors. We're trained to listen. We're trained to deal with all kinds of conversation. And it obviously works because we grow and we grow, even with all the specialist telephone lines there are. We still, last year, well over 5 million contacts in the UK. So, you know, it's not dropping off. It's increasing.
The numbers are still going up. 5 million phone calls and visitors and so on.
Yeah, text and email too. So they all count in the contacts. So text, email, phone calls and visits to offices. Yeah, well over 5 million. I would think it'd be 5.5 at least this year.
It's a terrifyingly high number, isn't it?
It is a terrifyingly high number. And of course, our numbers went up a lot when we initially changed our way of the telephone working. We have now what's called an intelligent platform, and what it means to the, you know, the layman is it sends its calls to the longest waiting volunteer. So there is no regional call anymore. You could speak to someone in Orkney, you could speak to someone in the Channel Islands, you could speak to someone in Northern Ireland or anywhere in the UK. That's so much better, that's so much more efficient. That worked beautifully and still does. But then what happened was a good thing for many people, free call. So now free call. And that put the numbers up again, of course, because people were worried about their credit. They were worried about all that kind of stuff. So now it's even higher. And it won't go down. I can't see why it would. So anyone who needs to call us goes 116, 123, and they get through. They don't have to have credit on their phone. And so they can get through, and that's put the numbers up even higher, yeah.
And they can email if they want to, they can text if they want to,
yep.
whatever is
walk in.
Convenient, comfortable for them.
Yes, now you can imagine, can't you, that a lot of texts are younger people, not all, but many. Emails are almost turning into the letter of this century, I suppose. We still get letters, I mean, we don't personally, there is a branch for letters. And there are still quite a lot delivered each year, and they write letters back. But I think now email, it's more like letters, because everybody uses email now, of any age. And so you'll get an email from anybody. It gives them time to think. Some people are quite scared of the phone. And we get them from other places too. In fact, we get a fair number, not a huge number, but a fair number from America. Teens in America email us, which is... Don't know why, really.
Really? I thought there was an equivalent to the Samaritans in
You'd
America.
You'd think, wouldn't you? There are befrienders all over the world, which is something that Chad initially set up as well. And they've got to be, haven't they? They've got to be in all the various states. They've got to be something. But they go through to us quite a lot. Not a ridiculous amount, but you know, because you pick it up by the mom. It's always mom instead of mom. And the various high school things. And so you know. They don't tell you where they are. But you know.
Now, your volunteer organisation, is this something anybody could volunteer for, would you say?
I would say yes. I would say, I was asked recently at an information event, and it's not the first time I've been asked, can anybody be a Samaritan? And I would say that anybody who thinks they would like to be and is fairly open-minded, certainly you have to have some compassion about you, anyone who can take direction, because also, as I mentioned earlier, you don't give advice, and some people will find that very hard. But on the whole, if you want to do it, you would come along to information, you would then know if you thought, well, yes, I think I can deal with this, and then you would come along to selection, and that would give you an inkling of the things you might have to think about. It's not a test, it's just to see what kind of person you are, and you can see what we're like. And I think when most people who get through that, and most people do, go on to train, we have very few people drop out at training, and we have very few people who we have to have that conversation where we say, I don't know that you're going to be quite right. So yes, I would say virtually anybody. Yeah. From all ages.
All ages.
Our youngest is in their 20s and our oldest is 91. I mean, I can never do a talk without mentioning our oldest volunteer. He's been with Samaritans for 51 years.
Wow.
He's as good now as he ever was. He is open-minded. He's absorbed all the different technology, because when he joined, it was like you sat and waited for calls. You don't wait for calls now and you use a computer to switch them on and off. He doesn't do email, which is fair because, you know, touch typing, not the thing. But he checks emails because we always check an email between the two of us because the written word can be quite difficult. You might suddenly see something and think, oh, I don't know if that would be quite right. So you always check between two of you. But no, he's as effective as ever. And I think he did meet Chad, actually. I think he did. I'm not quite sure. I think he did. And he is in the Science Museum at the moment, not in body, but in voice. There's a communications gallery in the Science Museum where Samaritans is a big part of it, and Noel's voice, he won't mind me saying his name, I think most people know him, is there, and it's wonderful. So yes, and all ages in between, people who work full-time, but of course our numbers now are made up possibly even more of people who work full-time, and so the shifts have to accommodate this.
Now, you use the phrase, the two of us. I know one of the things you do is to make sure there's never one person on their own answering the phone. There's always at least one other person around so they can talk as well to make sure nobody goes home with bad memories and so on, worries.
Yeah, two. We have to have two on shift. We can have more, and we hope to do that in the future. But we have to have two to open the shift. So if somebody didn't turn up, the shift would close. Because, and there are several reasons, but the main one is to support each other. So even if you're both on the phone, you can sort of hear out of one ear. You're still concentrating, but it's just something that happens. And if you hear they're on a call, which sounds pretty serious, you'll be aware of it. So yes, you need that support. So at the end of a call, you'll probably talk to each other about your cause. The big thing about Samaritans is the support. At the end of a shift, you will call your leader, who is somewhere available. They're not in the place, but they know you're going to call, and you'll talk it through. If it worries you, if you're upset by anything, you'll usually get a call or a text next day from a leader or from your co-SAM. No one is left worried or upset. But what I would say is that the training itself helps you enormously to deal with calls, to cut off when you leave. You go home, and although you might think, oh, I hope that girl was all right, or I hope it turned out well, quite honestly, I can say hand on heart, I don't agonise because I've done what I can do. I can't do any more. And that's what we're taught to do. And it works, but you do have that support always, yeah.
Right. Now, you're a volunteer organisation and you never charge anyone, so how does the financing work out?
Yeah, we are. We're all volunteers from top to bottom. We all have jobs. I just happen to be the director at the minute, and I'm coming to the end of my 3 years doing that. So no one in a branch is paid. No one at the very top of Samaritans is paid. We have an admin section, which is quite a small section when you consider we have 201 branches and up to 20,000 volunteers at any one time. And they are based at Yule. I can't even remember how many of them there are now, but there's not 100. So they're the only paid, and they're not paid brilliantly. They're paid. Okay, you know, it's enough, but it's quite as low. So we have to raise our own funds. So each branch raises enough, tries to run their branch for the year. So that means running it, electricity, all the stuff you need to run a house, some of the telephone charges go on there. And fundraising is something that no one joined to do, really, although we do try now to attract support volunteers to fundraise. But we all get involved in it. So we do all kinds of stuff. We've done ferret racing, fire walking. We enter big things, you know, like the marathon, like various walks. Recently, my daughter did it for me, actually, because she said my feet wouldn't do it, which was a 25K walk over the London bridges, backwards and forwards. And she did that for me. So it's always on our agenda, fundraising. We don't get government help. We don't get anything. We get a few little things, but then they're only to do specialised things. So, for instance, we have listeners, we train listeners in prisons, so we get a little bit of funding for that because, obviously, that's sort of something to do with the prison service. We get a little bit from Network Rail because, of course, we support Network Rail. We go there, we train, you know, they're trained by Samaritan, some of them, and also we attend the stations. It's been a bad year this year on the rail locally. So funding has to be done by us. We support our central a little bit, obviously, by almost a tax on our own little branches. It's not very much. And then they have to raise their own funds too centrally. So it's always an ongoing thing. That's how it works. And it's always on our mind. Yeah.
Okay. Now, if anyone would like to contact you as interested in the Samaritans, wants to know more, what's the best way to contact?
I think the easiest way initially is to go to our website, Northwest Surrey. You just Google it, Northwest Surrey will come up at the top, Northwest Surrey Samaritans. And on there will be information about us, and there'll be a tab as well which says volunteer with us, and then it will give you how to do it. We also, I mean, we're just setting up right now. We'll be starting training this month. So our next training will be in February. And already there'll be information evenings coming up before then. And very shortly, we will have those dates on our website. They may not be there right this minute because they're probably not quite arranged, but they will be within the next few weeks. And then they'll give you information about how to come to information, which is really, you know. Yeah, so that's the easiest way.
Great. Thank you very much, Jill. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
You're welcome. Brooklyn's Radio.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, why not keep up to date with the Sound of Surrey by listening live at brooklandsradio.co.uk or through our free mobile app.